in North Central Indiana. It's the Insurgent Radio Network with Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy, broadcasting live from the bunker in Warsaw, Indiana, right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to drink, sometimes eat. You can reach Tom at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. You can direct your letters and mail to Tom Metzger, the Insurgent, or just old plain box holder. Good old Tommy will get it.
Here's Tommy.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is the Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Tom Metzger, Terrible Tommy. In the bunker right next to Terrible Tommy's Terrible Tavern, where the elite meet to drink and sometimes eat. Yeah, right behind our weapons of mass destruction used surplus yard, where people come from all around to buy and kick the tank tires and treads and all that kind of stuff, and seeing what they're going to take back home for the revolution. Yeah, that's right. This is the 6th of July, 2010, and unless the holiday's over, I don't like holidays. I'm going to tell you, I don't like any holidays because they're all geared to the capitalist greed factor of buy, 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 eat, eat, eat. I think it was Friday or Saturday, my gal and I went downtown and they were going to have a community thing on the main streets downtown and around the local courthouse, and 99% of everything was simply stuff to eat, and people were just eating, 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 eating. The one thing good that happened, they had one of these things where you get 3 balls for $1 to knock a guy in the water. Well, there was a cop there, off-duty cop, sitting on that pedal up there, and I knocked his ass in the water. Almost did it twice. I was within a hair, man, of doing it twice. I'm not sure. What's your name? I said, Tom Metzger is my name. Well, I hope they got it all out of the system for another year. They exploded enough fireworks in the county I live in to have taken over the state capitol. Would have taken a lot less than what they blew up in this county to invade and take over the state capitol. Probably would have taken a lot more to hold it, though. Now, don't forget, we're at P.O. Box 401, Warsaw, Indiana, 46581. Then send your correspondence to the Insurgent, to Tom Metzger, or to just plain box holder. And make your checks or money orders to Insurgent Tom Metzger. Or cash, how about that? We're not using the credit card system anymore because they don't like us. And we're probably better off that they don't like us. Well, I saw something that upset me quite a bit on the weekend, and that was the government is rounding up hundreds, maybe thousands of wild horses. And trying to put on the happy face that they're going to all end up in a good place. I got a feeling they're going to, most of them end up in a glue factory or making dog food. So there's not much one individual can do, but there's a lot of people coming together as a sort of a group, and some very well-heeled people that are trying to save those wild horses. And, of course, some of the ranchers are upset because they want the land for cattle grazing. Well, why do we need more cattle grazing? We need more meat. Where's that meat going? Is it just feeding our people or is it just feeding white people? No. A hell of a bunch of that meat is going outside the country to feed the mouths of the third world so they can come back here and squat on that land and kill the horses and eat the horses, probably. Yeah, so any type of thing that makes a dent in the environmental thing is you're on the wrong side of me. I mean, you know, some people know I'm a tree hugger. A literal tree hugger. Yeah. You haven't lived until you go out in the woods and in the solitude of the woods, put your arm around a tree and just stand there for a little bit. I know you think I'm nuts, but try it. I think you'll like it. Well, even though the Haiti situation and the perpetual niggerdom problem in Haiti, the only solution to that is to eliminate all the blacks off the island and turn it into an area where people from Eastern Europe and all over, and even white people from the United States, would probably like to go down there and really build a nation out of Haiti. But they're never going to do it as long as they got the Negroes, the niggers, the N-words in control. But I see Obama, Mrs. Obama, who you got to admit, the picture she's got of her asking for money for Haiti all the time, she does look like a chimp. You know, that's, you know, that always gets people in trouble. But when a nigger looks like an ape or a simian, and you say he looks like a simian, and they jump all over you, you know, and they know it's true. I mean, especially the one more pure-blooded ones. And even some of the women get to looking like a big gorilla. I'm just telling the truth, man. So anyhow, the one thing good, a lot of, hopefully most of the money that's going down to Haiti is going to be needed by the people here in this country because of this oil explosion in the Gulf of Mexico. Well, you may hear a little noise in the background murmuring, but I'm telling you, even in the bunker, it's a little close today. Outside, it's going to get up into the 90s today with a lot of humidity. It's real nice in the bunker here, but we need to circulate the air, or it gets pretty close, as they say in the old days. So anyhow, that's what you may hear in the background. Well, boys and girls, let's go to school. You know, it's been a while since I've talked about this. Now, we talk about infiltration, all that kind of stuff, but every time I have a little, what I would call a speed bump come up, like last two or three days, I don't know, last week or whatever, with an individual attempting to cause a little upheaval, and seems like he's going out of his way to take advantage of an error, you know, that I sent out accidentally some names, and all of a sudden I'm a bad guy, but the same guy sends out the same list himself to everybody, so. Anyhow, it takes me back to the days when I had a very, very close, intimate understanding of COINTELPRO because I lived through it in the 60s and the 70s. Yeah. Well, let's talk about COINTELPRO. That's COINTELPRO. It's an acronym for Counterintelligence Program. It was a series of covert and often illegal projects conducted by the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation aimed at investigating and disrupting dissident political organizations within the United States. Dissident, that's people they don't like. The FBI used covert operations from its inception. However, formal COINTELPRO operations took place between 56 and 1971. The FBI's stated motivation at the time was protecting national security, unquote, preventing violence, and maintaining the existing social and political order, unquote. Talk about it. That could be right out of the Soviet Constitution. Maintaining existing social and political order. I wish I could get a little bigger definition of what that means. In other words, don't screw with the system. If we give you the system, you take it. If you don't like it, we'll crush you. According to FBI records, 85% of COINTELPRO resources were expended on infiltrating, disrupting, marginalizing, and or subverting groups suspected of being subversive, such as communist and socialist organizations, the women's rights movement, militant black nationalist groups, and the nonviolent civil rights movement, including individuals such as Martin Luther King, the Right Reverend, and others associated with the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the National Association for the Advancement of Negro People, the Congress of Racial Inequality, the American Indian Movement, and other civil rights groups, a broad range of organizations labeled New Left. You see how they concentrate always on the Jew left, including Students for Democratic Society, the National Lawyers Guild, the Weathermen, almost all groups protesting the Vietnam War. Well, there were a hell of a lot of right-wingers protesting the Vietnam War, too, and even individual student demonstrators with no group affiliation. The nationalist groups, such as those seeking independence for Puerto Rico, which I agree with, the other 15% of COINTELPRO resources were expended to marginalize and subvert white hate groups. Color, that's okay, including the Ku Klux Klan and the National States Rights Party. The directives governing COINTELPRO were issued by FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover, the cocksucker, who ordered FBI agents to, and a crossdresser too, who ordered FBI agents to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, or otherwise neutralize the activities of these movements and their leaders. Well, I lived through all that, and they really did some dirty stuff. I remember with the Minutemen, they'd simply have FBI agents show up at your work, you know, and they'd just say, well, we'd like to talk to so-and-so. Well, you know what an employer's going to wonder and think and worry about if FBI agents show up and they're, well, back then they were pretty well-dressed. Anymore, they're not, but asking questions about somebody. And even though the person questioned don't have to say anything about it, and the FBI don't have to say anything and didn't say anything to the employer, first thing you know, the guy's fired just because the owner, the boss, didn't want any trouble. You know, that's the way with most white people. I don't want any trouble. Oh, no. I don't want any trouble. Yeah. And so they turn in their own mothers. But there was a hell of a lot more white organizations and individuals harassed with COINTELPRO than they're talking about, because most of this kind of propaganda that's put out explaining like COINTELPRO is written by people who are leaning Jew left. So that was one way they used to do, just come around and visit you on the job. Of course, they couldn't come up to you when you're leaving the job or anything like that. It had to be right in front of all your workers. Like now, similar was this raid on my house here a few months ago. they didn't get anything, and I'll bet you anything, they knew they weren't going to get anything unless they were very, very, very lucky. But they know that that kind of thing comes out in the local paper, picture of my house on the front page in glorious living color. They talk to the neighbors, the press do, and it gets on the regional TV and maybe a little national TV. And they've done their job. People, then they think, well, they'll be afraid of you. And the people that you associate with and do business with will be wary of you because you, even though they didn't arrest you, you're probably guilty of something. Well, it didn't seem to have too much of an effect here in the area where I'm at. In fact, it seemed to be just the opposite with a hell of a lot of people who said, if they didn't arrest you, why are they harassing you, you know? And if they're raiding your house and tearing your house up, and they don't arrest you, don't charge you with a crime, man, that ain't right. So sometimes their activities sort of backfire on them. And also they sent out letters to everybody that had ever telephoned my update line, of which I've been highly criticized for having an update line by this recent expert who's trying to give us advice and tell us how to run things and probably give him the power, whoever he is. Well, anyhow, there's a good book on how they disrupted the blacks up in L.A. It's called The Glass House Tapes. It's a hard book to get a hold of, paperback, but I think you can find them used. You might be able to get one fairly cheap. And even though it's against the blacks, the information is very good, very good. Because, you see, that was the problem with the right wing. If something happened to somebody in the left, they say, oh, that's wonderful, ha, 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 ha. And the Marxist left, anything happened to get people on the right, oh, that's wonderful. In other words, if the government does illegal things against you, it's okay. That's wonderful. But if it does it against us, that's bad. And if you're ever going to get any place, you got to think differently than that. You got to think out of the box. And as far as I'm concerned, the government doing anything against any dissident group illegally is an illegal act, and they should be put in prison. And so, the same way with any government that puts arms against another country without being invaded, without having a declaration of war against us. They're criminals when they do that. They're simply empire occupiers. And so, well, anyhow, let's see here. Well, with the Klan, it seemed like it worked a lot better, and I'm not going to go into why, but they'd send out letters purportedly from one person to another, and it'd actually be from the Klan or the feds, saying that certain Klansmen, wife was bedding down with another Klansman or another guy, and so they disrupt the families. That was very effective in the South. That COINTELPRO is really nothing but sophisticated rumoring, planting false rumors. Now, you can do the same thing, and I've done it for years, and so we can fight back. I mean, you find yourself an FBI agent or a cop that gives you trouble or something, and, well, for instance, I've told this story at least once. We were having problems with the police in Phoenix, Arizona at one time when I ran the Klan. And what I did was told the guys down there to talk to some of the prostitutes on the street, be friendly, maybe even giving them a little money, and get all the dirt on the cops. And there's a lot of gals on the street, like work in the street, that hate the cops, and they got a lot of dirt on them. You can get more dirt on a cop through a prostitute than almost any place else. And then I said, what we'll do is we'll send that stuff to the wives of these cops. And I put that out, made it public, that we were prepared to build dossiers on every cop in Phoenix. And if they continued to illegally, I mean, you know, out of bounds, harass our people, we would send those documents to the policeman's wife. Now, this is for guys, people who are going out of bounds. This is not for just, you know, regular cop type thing. This is where cops go out of their way unconstitutionally to persecute you. Well, that worked quite well, and then there was a time in Las Vegas where I was taken into the office of the chief of police, and I forget what his name was. He, in no uncertain terms to me, said that if I caused much trouble in Las Vegas, he could see I didn't leave Vegas alive and wouldn't even get off the plane back in California. And that was almost exactly what he told me there in the privacy of his office, that they'd have me done in. Well, I said, here's what I want to propose to you, that if some Saturday night or whatever your biggest night in your casinos, when the most people are there and things are really hot, you know, about, what, midnight or so, whenever. If all of a sudden the elevators around the place opened, and out would come guys in Klan robes, just walk around and start putting money on the and betting. Do you think you'd lose any money, boys? Do you think the casino owners would find that beneficial to their money-making operations? Think about that. So I left and came back to California, went back to California, and our Klan people never had any more trouble in Las Vegas. So, I mean, sometimes you, you know, you just, you don't have to do much, just have a pretty strong threat or a promise. Let me see. I'm trying to remember whether there's any more I can think of. There's been a million of them, man, I'm telling you. Well, of course, I've told you about the Douglas K. Seymour gig many times where he was an undercover cop in San Diego and infiltrated our group and how we maneuvered and manipulated him. And that's something you can do, too. If you're in a group and you absolutely conclude through, you know, real police-type work of your own that somebody's an agent, it might not hurt just to keep them in because they'll send somebody else in anyhow. Especially if this person is really trying to make himself look good by maybe giving you a lot of money, maybe giving you, you know, cars or whatever he can do, computers or whatever, because an informant that wants to stay in your good graces is always going to be your buddy and at your beck and call. Now, I don't want to say there's people that do that that, I mean, that are all ages. I've had some really good friends who've been with me who helped me out and give me a lot of stuff. But I'm talking about the occasional informant. He's going to want to make you happy. He's not going to fight with you and argue with you and criticize you. He want to make you happy. So you need money, he gives you money. Butler fell victim to that up at Aryan Nations. Anytime somebody gave him a hunk of cash, they were in. I'm trying to remember the Jew out in a Bar Mitzvah Jew out there in Maryland. It's been so long I can't remember his name. And it was even in the newspapers in the East how this guy was a Bar Mitzvah Jew, and he was right next to Richard Butler. And Butler was told many times, but the guy was giving him a lot of money because the guy was a multimillionaire. He's the guy who invented the sea monkeys. Remember in the comic books how they used to have an ad in the back of the comic books, these sea monkeys, you send them a dollar or something, they'd send you a little package, and you put it in water, maybe you remember that as a kid, and then they'd... These little things that looked like seahorses would swim around. Well, he made a fortune at that. Of course, he made a fortune in a lot of other things. He even looked like a Jew. Bob Miles even used to let him come to his place up there in Choctaw, Michigan. I always disagreed with him, but it was their bash. And so anyhow, that's another situation. But as I was saying, Douglas K. Seymour... gave us quite a bit of money, catered parties, use of nice automobiles. And if it hadn't have been for Douglas K. Seymour, an actual undercover cop, I wouldn't have got on the ticket for the Democratic run for Congress. So I got to thank the taxpayers of San Diego and San Diego Police Department for putting me over the top of getting signatures to get on the ballot to win the Democratic nomination for Congress. See, sometimes it pays to keep an informant around. Anyhow, that's one of the other things. Back in the days when we used to be pretty sure or fairly sure that our phones might be tapped once in a while, I would, if I'm talking to a close confidant, I'd say, you know those pineapples? He'd say, yeah. Well, I got a delivery. came in by boat or something, got shipped in from Canada or something. Now, I want you to have these pineapples, and I want you to take them someplace and, you know, do what you got to do. Well, of course, I was referring to hand grenades. And then I say, now, look, I'm going to meet you down at the park, Live Oak Park, here tonight at 9 o'clock, and I'll give you those cases of pineapples. And then what we do, we just send, either I'd go down there or the other guy would go down there and wait and see if anybody showed up. That's another way you can drive these people crazy. You can do the same things they do. These things are not rocket science that they pull. You can pull the same thing on them, but you got to be careful that you don't some way trip up and cross the line. But you can have a lot of fun, you know, like the time that the FBI had recruited a friend of my son John's and was going to have him infiltrate, and I don't know what they expected to learn because there was nothing illegal going on, but anyhow. So John got a call to meet this kid, and I've told this story before. If you've heard it before, well, you're going to hear it again. That he'd meet him in a restaurant. The restaurant was only about 2 blocks from my home in Fallbrook, California. I was sitting in my office with the scanner going, police scanner. Back then it was a little easy to scan people. And I was scanning the bug frequencies. I don't think I had planned to do that. I was just trying it out because there was a whole bunch of FBI frequencies in the frequency book. They were in the book, actually. Or if you have a good scanner, you can just go from 0 to 1,000 or something like that and cover every frequency. All of a sudden, I'm sitting there, I'm hearing these glasses tinkling, people talking, people walking around. I'm saying, what the hell is this? And at first, it didn't make sense to me. I couldn't understand where that'd be coming from. And then I got to thinking, damn, I'll bet it's that restaurant down there. And then my stupid brain started working that they'd put a bug on in this guy's pocket. And so I was recording all this, put it on a tape recorder, and went down to the restaurant, and John and this guy was still there. And I said, John, we're going to have to go. I'd like to talk to your friend. Why don't we come out in the parking lot? And his friend started acting a little funny. So I got him out by the car, and I said, now, I want you to get in the car because I want to show you something, and we'll be back pretty soon. Just get in the car. No, I ain't getting that car. I ain't getting in that car. What's your problem? We're just going to drive around the block. I wanted you to hear something. No, I ain't getting in that car. I ain't getting in that car. I started laughing, so I pulled out the portable tape recorder and started playing it. And it was him trying to set up my son in the restaurant through the bug. And then he wanted to take off running. I said, "Well, you go down the block there and tell those federal boys they got to get up a lot earlier in the morning if they're gonna try to entrap us." Yeah. And then to add insult to injury, I called the regional paper, the Oceanside Blade Tribune, and played the tape and told them the whole story. And so they had a big article on their front page, something like Metzger thwarts FBI sting or something like that. So I'm sure the FBI cut that out, put it up on their wall down at their office in San Diego. Now, another thing, don't assume these agents are brilliant people. I'm sure they have some brilliant people, but the average agent is not that bright. He's certainly not any smarter than you are. Because I used to get, you know, they profile us and all the time. That's why they want you to respond to a lot of things and talk a lot. Anyhow, they get a profile on you. Well, I used to listen to them the dispatcher for the FBI office in San Diego, and it was funnier than hell because they had a mush-mouthed nigger directing these agents where to go. And the funny part about it was that a lot of the agents, they transfer them around. And they had a couple of agents there, or maybe more, transferred from New Jersey. Now, if you've been to New Jersey, you know how New Jersey natives talk. They don't talk like San Diego people. And the funniest thing was this nigger was mush-mouth talking to these New Jersey FBI agents where to go. And they'd say, "What'd you say? What street?" Of course, they were unfamiliar with the streets anyhow. "What'd you say?" And the nigger would say, "What'd you say?" And it took half an hour to get a simple message back and forth between these people. So just remember, they try to make federal people on TV and all that. They're super smart. They're super intelligent and all that. But most of them are mediocre at most, but that doesn't mean they're not dangerous. They are dangerous, and they do have the power to set you up. So you have to be very careful of how far you go to even set up a joke against them. I mean, because if they can somehow twist it around, they will and try to hammer you. But then there was that time where I was printing dollar bills up, I guess it was, and putting the message of the Klan on the back. And the Treasury Department agents called me and asked to meet with me, and I met with them, and I said, "What's the big problem?" "Well, you can't do it at this size. It's got to be a different size. You can do it, but you can't do it this way." I said, "Okay, well, I'll give you the plates, and it'll be all over." They said, "Well, the problem we have is these niggers down in Oceanside are taking these $1 bills. They're pasting photocopies of 20s on the ends of them, and they're trying to pass them." Well, nobody in his right mind would accept these were the most terrible counterfeit that you could ever want to see. Can you imagine taking a dollar bill that's already technically copied and counterfeit and then put a $20 bill? I don't even remember exactly how they did it, but these crazy-ass niggers are doing that. I'm sitting there having a cup of coffee with those Treasury Department guys, and we're all laughing our ass off. So above all, the COINTELPRO person, and they see now they have no restrictions at all. Under Homeland Security, there's no restrictions at all. They can pull any shit they want. So it's worse now than it was back then. But we've covered the fact that how a COINTELPRO agent, no matter what method he uses, is going to, or her, I don't mean to just say he, because hers do it real good, too. They're going to want to be your best friend, get right next to you, want to be... Douglas K. Seymour used to hold my little kids when they were small and all that kind of stuff. And he'd go to the baseball game my son was pitching at, all this stuff. That's the way they play it. And they get you totally... in their confidence, or you get, and that's the way they play it, and it's a very dirty game, but they do it. So they're going to want to do anything to get as close to you as possible and observe your operations, the inside of your house, the inside of your office, and just a whole lot of things they want to do to get close to you, and they'll never be nasty-ass guys. No, they'll be nice guys. They'll be really nice guys. And then there's the other way to spot them. Now, this recent flap I've had here, which hasn't happened in a long time, it used to happen all the time, but a person who's sending out something that is very true, a lot of it is true if it was possible to operate in the way that that person said. But we all know, I hope you know by now, that the very fact that this person believes you're going to have real total security is a bunch of bullshit. In fact, it's dangerous for anybody to operate in any manner thinking they have security. Because no one, I mean, your enemies have the greatest sophisticated methods of finding out who you are in the world now. So, but this individual, which makes me think that the person is probably COINTELPRO and federally connected, is that it was so well laid out and so professional. And if Metzger would just operate like I'm telling him to, man, everything would be fine, man. And you guys going to follow him, you're all going to be in trouble. Well, it's going to be just the opposite. You follow a COINTELPRO person, and you get in a lot of trouble. And so I'm looking into that situation, and because I want to get a profile on who this person really is, and I'll let you know. And but like I say, this is the first time that's happened in a couple of decades. That's that sophisticated. It's not a kid doing it. I mean, it's not an amateur. It's not a real malcontent. I don't think it's even a malcontent because it's so professionally done. So I think we are experiencing a reissuing of the old COINTELPRO program. So, and I'll tell you what, if you want to, you can change your email, but I don't think it's going to make any difference. You can do all this stuff, you know, but I don't think it makes a damn bit of difference. That's why I hide in plain sight. And like I said, if I decided to do something dastardly, well, I'd just go do it. So far, I haven't made any kind of plan to do that. But I can tell the feds that, or anybody else, that anybody can be driven to the point of violence. And if they're reasonably smart, they can pull it off. They probably get caught, but they pull it off. Look at Timothy McVeigh. Well, yeah, they caught him, but he did the number. And even von Breuning, who that was sort of a minor situation. They caught him, but he did damage, you know, and like that. So. Okay, let's see if I can find some other stuff to pontificate about. Oh, one other thing, too, especially the Klan, and a lot of other groups, too, but primarily the Klan, not only were they using COINTELPRO tactics against them, rumoring and all that kind of stuff, but they had agents up the butt in the groups. So the Klan really didn't have a chance unless they decided to operate lone wolf style, which they, in most cases, didn't. Anytime you got a group of half a dozen guys, you're going to have an infiltrator. Not maybe right away, but sooner or later. So the poor Klan, they didn't have a chance. You know, another thing historically, I just happened to see the other day, and it's a little off the subject, but really not when you're talking about intelligence. I didn't know that the telegraph system had expanded a lot prior to the Civil War. And the minute the Civil War started, Lincoln and the Northern guys, they just crisscrossed the hell out of all the property that they controlled with telegraph, which was, you know, the email of their day. And so here was the South didn't have any telegraph, or at least not much. Why, hell, the North had a tremendous weapon against the South. Lincoln was actually sleeping a lot of the time in the war room, taking the messages from the frontline commanders right off the machine. And they could give directives on a certain battle. Do this, do that. And Lincoln, a lot of times, interceded and said, no, you do this. And many times he was right. Here in the South, they didn't have all that. And so I thought that was very interesting. It's something to maybe you want to dig more into. See, you got to have the technology. And there was a lot of technology that the North had developed that the South didn't have. But now the South did develop some pretty interesting technology, especially making bombs and things, piss bombs and all kinds of stuff. And supposedly they did have one rocket that they let off and allegedly went 20, 30 miles and blew up something. So they weren't without, and they had a lot of spies. And they had a lot of spies working out of Canada. Most of the Confederate spies go up to Canada, and then they come down into New York, and then they do things like set bombs and all kinds of stuff and set fires in New York City and so forth. But anyhow, that's that. Now, I'm not sure whether I covered this before or not, but one of our good buddies sends us these, you know, street level, down to earth recommendations. I'm going to give it to you. TT, this may seem mundane in the long run. It is not. I just replaced my 40-year-old 5-gallon per flush toilet with a newer 1.28 gallon per flush toilet. On deep sale prices due to the falling home construction demand. I also put an insulated jacket over my water heater and insulated both the cold input pipe and the hot outflow pipe with insulated tape, duct tape, and insulated pipe foam going from the water heater to the wall. I've already made insulated sheets that fit into my window frames, which have and continue to save a considerable amount of money. I have also insulated my refrigerator with insulated sheets that's greatly cut my electric bills. I have washed all four of my outside walls twice, then primed them twice each and painted them once in accord with the weather for best use. I have built new clotheslines and never been used exclusively before. And I have now replaced all my incandescent light bulbs with new mercury and highly efficient light bulbs. Many I have spray painted red. My savings on utilities have been adding up and will start to add up much more from now on. Lone wolves should be led to be doing the same thing in order to get over the huge hurdle of advancing on to a ghost wolf and doing missions. Given the housing construction has collapsed, now is the time to do home improvements that will cut utility costs. And many of those construction materials are on the deep sale prices due to collapsing demand. The toilet I just installed cost only $120, yet it lists for two or three times that much. Okay, there we go. Good advice. Well, I'm not sure what I told you, but I rerouted some of my wastewater. I was able to take a shower from the shower and from the tub. I take out the back of the house through a pipe of its own, and then that goes into a big metal tub that has holes in it so it can leak the water out into the lawn, which does the lawn good too. But then in the middle of it, I set a bucket, a regular bucket, and when that fills up, then it overflows into the tub. But then every morning I've got myself a bucket of water there that's got enough soapy water in it that I take it out and put it on my fruit trees and other vegetables. And it's better than just straight water. So that's one thing it can do. And then I take also out of my kitchen sinks that water there and drain that out a separate drain that goes into the grass and undergrowth on the property. This way I keep from filling my septic tank up with a lot of surplus water that tends to cause your septic tank not to work as well. In fact, they tell me the new housing, they all have to be done that way, where you can't put your oh yeah, and another exit drain I've got for the washer, and But the new buildings, they say that you have to do it that way. You can't put your washer water into the septic tank. Anyhow, there's a little thing that Terrible Tommy has done to try to cut my losses. Well, here's a little additional onto that one about the toilets from our friend. The newer, more efficient toilets are push-pull in their removal of waste, which is sort of like a push-pull airplane that has propellers in front and behind. Water is incompressible. The pulling action is like the intake cycle of a piston engine, wherein the piston pulls air into the cylinder. Most of the water in the newer efficient toilets is being used to create a water piston in front of the waste. This means that you never see most of the water used per flush. This water piston pulls the wastewater behind it while the air pushes the waste in front of it. Nature abhors a vacuum. So just like with a piston engine, the water piston creates a vacuum that the air rushes or pushes to fill. With only enough water in the bowl required to lubricate the waste, a small amount of water is required to make a water conversion of a metal piston. This is considerably less water than what is required to make a vortex or whirlpool. Thus, the tremendous savings in water usage. My monthly water bill just came at $37. I'm now expecting it to drop to at least $20 a month, which is the amount for the monthly radio club dues. This is another example of low-tech that lone wolves need to be able to handle the hurdle to become actionable ghost wolves. There you go. And don't forget the other answer, too. If you live out in the country someplace to where you have quite a bit of woods on your property and things like that, and you don't talk too much. See, when I was a kid, even up and through high school, we had an outhouse. You know, that little house out back, usually about 100 feet from the house, where you go to the toilet, and, there's no sewer or anything, and dig a hole in the ground, maybe 10, 15 foot deep, maybe more, and you build a little enclosure over it, and that's what I had to use when I was a kid all the way up until I went into the Army. And then every once in a while, you throw some lime in there to keep the flies and just general sanitary. And, after a few years, when that fills up, you just simply put rocks over it or gravel or whatever and seal it up, put lime in it before you do it. So in a pinch, and you don't have a modern toilet to use, if I were you, I'd prepare a small outhouse on the back of your property and keep it away from your well or wherever you get your water, and keep it well away from any running streams and things like that. And now you can buy these used fiberglass toilets. I'm sure you can get them pretty cheap now because they've been around for a long time. Put one in the back of your property and camouflage it, keep it out of sight. And then when the time comes, if you need it, you've got it. And there's nothing more important to an individual than a toilet. You tell me at the right time, if you don't have a toilet, man, you're going to be really upset, so... Anyhow, that's another thing you can do. Oh, along with that, I'll let you know that when we bought that property in the late 40s, that outhouse was there, and I imagine the hole originally had been about 10 or 15 feet deep, and other people had lived there before us, and so we used that up until mid-50s, 56, I know for sure. And never filled up, so a hole that's 10 or 15 feet deep will last you for years as far as with a lot of use, too. But don't tell any people work for the county or the state or like that, because I think in most areas now they've tried to do away with that. I'm not quite sure what the law is here where I'm at. I'm going to look into that, see if there's a grandfather clause on that. But like I've always said, when it came to doing anything, if you ask mom, she's always going to say no. So I'm that way with the government. Don't ask them. Just do it. If they make you tear it down or change it, well, okay.
Murder has taken place in another American workplace, taking 29 lives. The authorities know who did it, so shouldn't that person be made to pay for this heinous crime? Yes, but the killer is one of America's largest coal corporations, Massey Energy Company, and you can't give the death penalty to a corporation, can you? Well, the Supreme Court has ruled that a corporation is a person, so why not? Massey, headed by its right-wing multimillionaire CEO Don Blankenship, has spent millions of dollars on lobbyists and lawmakers to fend off any effective regulations to protect mine workers. By using its political clout to muzzle the federal watchdog, Massey has been able to flaunt the law. Last year, it had nearly 500 safety violations in just one of its mines, including life-threatening violations. Its punishment? Fines totaling a mere $168,000. Chump change to an outfit with $56 million in profits last year. Blankenship blithely says, "We don't pay much attention to the violation count." On April 5th, federal inspectors added two more violations to the tally of dangerous indifference at the corporation's Upper Big Branch mine in West Virginia. The honchos just shrugged. That afternoon, Upper Big Branch exploded, killing 29 miners. Blankenship expressed his compassion by saying, "Violations are unfortunately a normal part of the mining process." Normal? Nonsense. Other major mining nations provide effective regulatory protections to assure that such deaths are abnormal. By putting profits over human life, America's coal industry is killing people. Shouldn't these profiteers pay more than a fine? This is Jim Hightower saying, one watchdog group is calling for the immediate arrest of Blankenship for homicide.
Well, isn't it the Republicans all the time that tell you how much they care about the American people? You notice they never say American worker, and of course they never say white worker. That would never happen. They'd say the American people. So we become the American people. But look at Mr. Harry Byrd that just died. They spent all the time talking about whether he was a opportunistic guy who joined the Klan back in the 40s. But what they don't talk about is this is his state where these mining infractions go on and people get killed, killed, killed. I mean, he's been in there for all this time, and he's been cooperating with the people who are screwing and killing white workers. But that never seems to come up too much. Once in a while, there's a real brave person out there that says something about it. Well, you know, the same family are big contributors to the teabaggers. Yeah, you're going to find that there's several of those corporations like that that do some very bad things. Are firm Republican supporters and giving money to groups like the teabaggers. Yeah, so I just thought you might want to know that. Well, I see over in Deutschland, the so-called neo-Nazi parties, which I don't call neo-Nazi parties at all. They're just conservative right-wing type outfits. They're saying Germany's two main parties now are considering a merger in an apparent bid to turn around their flagging political fortunes, a media report said Friday. Well, I think I said something about this before. The National Democratic Party, NPD, and the German People's Union, DVU, are sounding out their members about a possible merger. Sources at the NPD party's conference in Bamberg told the daily Tagesspiegel. Well, let me tell you something. If you're gonna change things, if you want to have a revolution or whatever you want to call it in anything, you're not going to do it with political parties. Political parties are not the origins of revolution. You got to have the small percentage of people that are willing to get their hands dirty to start it, a revolution. And then the political parties evolve out of that. You know, get the cart before the horse, you know. These people think they can get a bunch of people and have big meetings and then they go on and go on and go out and elect people to office when they got all these laws in Germany, you can't do anything. I mean, who's kidding themselves? I mean, this stuff don't work. Your political parties over there, you're wasting your time. You're masturbating. Stop it. It'll make you go blind. It's too late. You got to get your hands dirty. Remember the National Socialists? They called themselves a party, but, you know, obviously they were only about seven guys. And so they got a few more guys. They went into the streets and challenged the system one way or another. Worked for them over there, and then gradually there was a party, a real party. So forget all that stuff you right. Well, of course, let the right wing do that. You know, let's get them out of the way. I feel more comfortable talking to some of the elements of the left anyhow. So, but anyhow, that's what they're trying to do. Same old worn out tactics the right wing uses all the time.
Fine, John. Good morning for Michael Schwer.
Good morning. I, for one, am sick and tired of all these Jews coming on C-SPAN and others. Stations and pushing us to go to war against our Muslim friends. They're willing to spend the last drop of American blood and treasure to get their way in the world. They have way too much power in this country. People like Wolfowitz and Fife and the other neocons that jewed us into Iraq, and now we're going to spend the next 60 years rehabilitating our soldiers. I'm sick and tired of it.
John in Franklin, New York. Any comments?
Yeah, I think that, of course, American foreign policy is eventually up to the American people. One of the big things that we've not been able to discuss in this country for the last 30 years is our policy toward the Israelis. Whether we want to be involved in fighting Israel's wars in the future is something that Americans should be able to talk about. They may vote yes. They may want to see their kids killed in Iraq or Yemen or somewhere else to protect Israel. But the question is, we need to talk about it. Ultimately, Israel as a country is of no particular worth to the United States.
It doesn't mean strategically?
Strategically. We have they have no resources we need. Their manpower is minimal. Their association with us is a negative for the United States. Now, that's a fact. What you want to do about that fact is entirely different. But for anyone to stand up in the United States and say that our support for Israel doesn't hurt us in the Muslim world, or our support for Hosni Mubarak's dictatorship doesn't hurt us, is to just defy reality.
Yes, I remember I saw that live. That was quite interesting. On C-SPAN? I mean, you know, we used to get a lot of that stuff on C-SPAN, but not as much anymore. Well, here's an interesting article. A private group up in Boise, Idaho, that drew attention in 2007 by naming U.S. Senator Larry Craig to its Idaho's Hall of Fame list amid furor over his sexting arrest, has elevated Mount Rushmore sculptor and one-time Ku Klux Klan member Gudzon Borglum to its 2010 class honorees. Borglum, born in Idaho Territory in 1867, chiseled the monumental heads of Presidents George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Abraham Lincoln, and Theodore Roosevelt into the granite of the South Dakota Black Hills. In the mid-1920s, Borglum was also in the Klan. Some historians speculate that Borglum, by most accounts, was a complex, ambitious, difficult figure who joined the KKK to secure financing for a Confederate monument at Georgia's Stone Mountain that he never completed. Others say he was a prairie populist with an anti-Semitic, anti-Jew tendencies who hoped the KKK would help advance his political aspirations. Dallas Cox, Idaho Hall of Fame president, said She knew only that Borglum was the man whose labors in South Dakota today draw 2 million visitors annually. Ooh, I guess they all buy a Pepsi Cola, too. He was chosen by the group's volunteer board of directors, including the Idaho State Controller Donna Jones, as part of its effort to honor people from all 44 Idaho counties. Cox said Bear Lake County, where Borglum was born to Mormon pioneers, wasn't yet represented. Well, you see, he was a good man. Now, you don't hear him talking about him much, that he was terrible for being a Klansman. But I imagine they've done it before, and I imagine they'll get around to it again. That's about it for today, Tears Day, July the 7th, 6th, 7th. What the hell is it again? Nah, that's all right. Close enough. We'll see you tomorrow. Woden's Day, Wednesday, Dave Lane's favorite day. Incidentally, I just had one of our people heard a radio show in which Ghost Wolf Radio Man quoted from David Lane's booklet, and I just, on the spur of the moment, I don't remember. But anyhow, it talked in there about in a time in where complete breakdown in the law and everything, that there was a problem with getting women for the white guys. That there were white guys, revolutionaries, running around in the hills and didn't have white women, so they went into town and kidnapped strippers from the stripper bars and took them out to their camp and all that, because they needed women to repopulate. So this guy got all excited that somehow Radio Ghost Wolf was promoting kidnapping white women and taking them out and doing bad things to them. And it was on my show, and I must have said it was okay. Well, please, when we put a show on, listen to it carefully and take it with that book that David Lane booklet he wrote was KD Rebel, and it was totally fictional. So get a life, will you? 14-5.
Well, it really has been nice being with you, but I'm afraid that I've got to leave. As you know, I'm a rodeo cowboy, and there's a rodeo down in Mesquite. That's the life of a rodeo cowboy, breaking broncs or getting broke. That's the life of a rodeo cowboy, and that's the only life I know. On the day you think today is the big one, you're walking away with all that they own, and you're lying hurting hearing someone say, give him a hand, that's all that cowboy's taking home. Hot beer and a cold stale hamburger makes a meal sort of hard to enjoy, and it kind of makes you think of your mama's chicken. But that's the life of a rodeo cowboy. That's the life of a rodeo cowboy, breaking broncs or getting broke. That's the life of a rodeo cowboy, and that's the only life I know.